Class of 89.
It's a boy!
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 89 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 30 this year. I'm Natasha Pasetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is the first installment of our three-part series on A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. Kicking things off is Alice Johnson herself, Lisa Wilcox. Lisa discusses the deeper societal issues within The Dream Child, the challenges of acting on those elaborate sets, people picketing the movie over violence, fighting Robert Englund in a pool of chocolate, and much more. We'll get to Lisa's stories in just a minute, but first, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. In 1979, the first issue of Fangoria was released into the world. It's been 40 years, and Fangoria is better than ever. Each issue bringing you 100 pages of exclusive, carefully curated content honoring horror's past, present, and future. These articles and interviews will never be published online. Let me say that again. Never be published online. So the only way to read them is by getting your hands on a physical, collectible copy of your own. Now, we can't give anything away because we want the experience to be a surprise, but we can safely say that you do not want to miss a single page. Head on over to Fangoria.com to learn more and to subscribe. And while you're there, make sure you enter the promo code CLASSOF. That's CLASSOF, class of, to save 15% off your subscription. You're welcome, people. Go to Fangoria.com and start your subscription today. And I want to tell you about Manic Panic. Manic Panic has been turning heads since 1977 with over 40 semi-permanent hair color shades ranging from After Midnight Blue to Vampire Red. Their hair colors have appeared in films including Alone in the Dark from 1982, Ultraviolet, Suicide Squad, and Vox Lux. Check them out online at manicpanic.com and take 20% off your order with the discount code FANGO. That's F-A-N-G-O. Manicpanic.com, discount code FANGO. Now, let's get to Lisa's stories about working on The Dream Child. You, of course, played Alice Johnson in The Dream Master and The Dream Child. She goes through a transformation from 4 to 5, I think. And in 5, we see a much more confident Alice. Can you tell us about that transition? And was that very much a part of the script? Or was that you feeling more comfortable in the role? Tell us a little bit about that.
It definitely was a choice that I made to be strong in 5. And it was definitely a choice in Nightmare 4 to start Alice off as very meek and mild. Mm. Wallflower child. You know, just a wallflower girl. So those were very specific choices I made. And I also, the scripts also provided the proper, how do I explain it? The scripts definitely developed Alice beautifully, I feel, the way it's written. And it is written, you know, she's a flower child, she's meek, she's insecure, you know, her mother's died, dad's an alcoholic and right. all that stuff. And she doesn't want to face her life, hence. In 4, well, she had her mirror is covered with photos. She doesn't want to face her life, face right. herself. And so, you know, through 4, you know, Alice develops. Well, one, she's taking on people's her friends' personalities, which is also to me an example of we do need our friends in life. They do support us. They do. They rub off on us. You know,
definitely.
And we need them for support and to get through life. And so I think that's sort of a mirror of, you know, the way the script is done. And then on the 5, she is definitely, by the end of 4, she's, you know, she's badass. She is strong. She has been through hell and back and survived it.
Yes.
Right? So what I love about the character of Alice in 5 is that there's so many, you know, dad gets sober. I mean, the film covers a lot of social issues, alcoholism. And then teen pregnancy.
Oh yeah.
The possibility maybe abortion,
right.
Adoption by the parent. I mean, it covers so many things that Alice has to make choices about for what's right for her. And she's strong. She knows what she wants and she knows what she doesn't want by Nightmare 5, you know, by Nightmare 5 for sure.
Absolutely. So. And you're right. Like, it is such a serious movie. And at the same time, it's also, I think, one of the jokier movies in regards to Freddy's character. But it really does deal with a lot of heavy issues. Did you talk to the producers a lot about that? Was that something they really wanted to pivot towards in this movie?
Well, they, you know, they wrote the script. They didn't ask me where I saw Alice going. You know, but when I read the script, I mean, I really liked it. And I admired the courage that the producers had to examine all these social issues. Because the other social issues, of course, were anorexia and bulimia with Greta's character.
Right.
Again, alcoholism with Dad. And then we have Dan, you know, Freddie's in, don't drink and drive with the champagne and all that, making it look like Danny was drinking and that's how he got killed, you know. So it's a brave little film. And a lot of people kind of bashed it, you know, it did not do great at the box office. But now the interesting thing is, you know, when I go to conventions and things and talk to people that come and talk, you know, come to my table, 5 is actually their favorite one.
Really?
And I think And I think it's taken a few decades for people to really appreciate what that film was demonstrating, what that film was talking about, which were teen issues that real teens have to deal with in their families and with their friends.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure a lot of people can, you know, relate to that. I mean, we were all teenagers at one point, and it's really cool that a movie would take on those topics and know that the demographic who was going to see that movie would be teenagers and that they would be exposed to that. And who knows, like, maybe, I'm sure you've probably heard it at conventions, of it maybe even helping people out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when it came out in 1989, it was too heavy for people to deal with. You know, they want to go, they want a popcorn movie.
Right.
You know, Nightmare 4 was definitely a popcorn movie. 5 is not. 5 makes you really look at some serious stuff, you know, and it's uncomfortable.
Right.
But now, 30 years later, you know, we're so much more open as a society discussing those kinds of topics. Nothing's in the closet anymore. And, it just was a very different time in 89, you know?
Yeah, and it's really cool how it's aged. And when you watch that film, it is so surreal. It's probably the most, I would say, aesthetically surreal nightmare movie. It's very much like gothic and just weird, you know, set pieces going on, different landscapes, like the labyrinth stairs that you're climbing all over. What was it like to interact with those kinds of sets?
It was really interesting, I have to say. Stephen Hopkins, did storyboards, and he's an amazing artist. And he really had this vision for what the set to look like, and what we called the Escher set, you know. And this set was amazing. It was huge. I can't even believe what they built. It was fascinating. But there were interesting things to deal with it, because, again, in acting, sometimes you have to be reacting to something that isn't really there.
Right.
It's going to be there later.
Of course.
So I remember the one scene when Jacob is running up and down the stairs, and I'm running up and down the stairs. And I remember Stephen telling me, you know, I had to, like, put my head back as far as I could to say one of the lines, because I'm looking at Jacob way up there or something. And of course, he's not way up there. He's nowhere to be found. So I really had to listen to the director and trust him, and knowing, and the DP and trust him on, you know, even though it feels really awkward with my head so far back, but it played, that's how it had to play on film, and it worked out fine, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I depended on him quite a bit for, you know, angles and head backwards, sideways, whatever.
I mean, on a nightmare film, you're always going to be challenged for sure. And that makes me think of the fight scene at the end with Freddy, when you and Freddy are literally battling for control of Alice's body. What was that like to shoot that scene? Because that looks like it was very challenging.
It definitely was very challenging. I had a little person body double for that. She did most of it. quite frankly.
Oh, cool. I see. Yeah. I would have never known.
So that's how that, you know, came to be. And so she had to do the heavy lifting much more than I did.
That's kind of a nice break from all the, you know, running and
yeah.
fighting, you know, that you're doing in this movie. But that's
and
cool.
And the dialogue. I had a lot of dialogue.
You had a lot of dialogue, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sniper 5 2 is the one that has the least amount of screen time of Freddy, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it, you can tell when you watch the film.
Yeah.
He's probably in about, I don't know, five, seven minutes maybe.
Right.
When he is in it, you know it and you're laughing. And there were many scenes that were cut from mm-hmm. the movie due to the graphic nature, like the Greta scene where he's feeding
oh, yeah.
her own intestines and such.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty, there was definitely some grotesque moments, absolutely. And I remember in 1989, when the film came out, there were picketers. There were people picketing about the violence
really?
In Nightmare 5. Yes. And before it even came out and to get through the censors, they had to keep editing and editing things out because the censors were giving it an X rating because of the violence.
An X rating? Oh, my
yeah.
God.
The violence, I know. And I remember Rupert Harvey, I think his name was one of the producers, and I said, you know what? Do you hear they're picketing? They were picketing. About the violence, and he's like, good, more publicity.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, he's right. I mean, that is always a
yeah.
good thing, especially
yeah.
when it's a horror
yeah.
movie.
But they were picketing in Los Angeles, in Westwood.
Wow, you
really
know that's
insane.
Bad.
Right. If California, it was too much for California, then I don't know.
Well, it is a pretty horrific movie. The deaths are very creative, which is the fun
mm-hmm.
part about it, and why it's not like so scary to me is because I'm like, I can appreciate that. That's really original.
Right. Good for good. Good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot more people today who go back and revisit Nightmare on Elm Street, too. They, again, I think there's just a much higher appreciation for it now than when it came out.
What was it like when the first time you saw the movie in its entirety?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was like, oh, again, kind of going back to, oh, that's why he had me. Looking up with my
oh,
head
yeah.
as far back as possible. Oh, okay. Oh, I understand. And I love seeing the comic book. I call it the comic book scene
oh, right.
when it's black and white, and then but he's in color, and then he gets cut and dies, and his blood is red with
yeah.
the black and white. That's so clever. I was like, that was awesome.
It was so cool.
Yeah, and also just the play with black and white with the big Freddy, too. You know, the big monster-looking
oh,
Freddy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was just so clever. It really, really was. I was really impressed with the effects and how they played out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think that goes, again, to the point, you know, of appreciating it more, you know, because they did,
mm-hmm.
Stephen Hopkins tried a lot of different things, you know,
mm-hmm.
which was great for the moviegoer. And,
yeah.
of course, you know, Robert England had, you know, little screen time on this, but this was the second time you were working with him. And did
mm-hmm.
that make you more comfortable in the Alice character? Did it kind of make the Freddy scariness go away a little bit? What was it like working with him a second time?
You know, we spent a lot more time together on 4, as obviously because it's such less screen time on 5, but it's really, you know, we're totally comfortable with each other. I mean, when I first worked with him in 4, he's such a nice, just a fantastic guy, incredibly intelligent, incredibly interesting, and he made us all feel very, very comfortable. And, you know, the thing is, too, like, you're literally sitting in the makeup trailer together, and he's getting his Freddy face put on. I'm getting, you know, red dye put on my hair. And we're just sitting there talking about, I don't know, I remember he was remodeling his bathroom or something, and we were talking about grout and tiles and, you know, things
wow.
like that. So, you know, it was just like, you know, we're just like regular people, and then we walk out of the trailer and we go to set and we do our job, you know? So,
yeah.
It was like, I call him Uncle Robert. He's my Uncle Robert.
Talking
yeah.
grout with Uncle Robert.
Yeah.
Now, you're a mom. Did the dream child kind of stick with you for a while afterwards? Like when you had children, did you make a decision to show the movie to your kids? What was that like, becoming a mom for real and then that experience on the Dream Child?
Well, you know, interesting enough, you know, I have a boy in Nightmare on Elm Street 5, Dream Child, and I ended up having two boys in real life.
Oh.
And as far as them watching the film, I wouldn't let them watch it until I think they were about 13 years old. Mm. I just didn't want them, because, you know, or to see either one of them, because, you know, I cuss and four and, you know what I mean? you know, it was not a good, you know, they don't see their mother doing that, you know, but yeah, it definitely stuck with me. But, I probably watched five when I was pregnant. I'm sure I did. But I'm also, I love horror films, and this is kind of bizarre, but do you know the film Rosemary's Baby?
Of course.
Of course, yes. Well, I decided to thrill myself and watch it while I was pregnant.
Oh my God.
I'm a thrill seeker. What can I say?
Wow. Anyway. Yeah, that's definitely, like, you have to have a sense of humor and love horror to watch Rosemary's Baby when you're pregnant, for sure.
Yeah, and not get freaked out about it.
Yeah. And your boys are fine. They're not the spawn of Satan, right?
No, they're absolutely fine. Absolutely wonderful.
Nice. Yes. Lisa, do you have a favorite memory from the making of Dream Child? Is there, like, a certain experience you had on the set that you'll just always remember for the rest of your life?
Yes, I'll never forget. I call it the jacuzzi scene with Freddie, and we're in muddy water, and then I grab a I think it was a rake or a broom, anyway, something with a big long stick, and I jab him.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget, because that muddy water, we were actually standing in chocolate water.
Delicious.
They put cocoa in it. So that's what we're, like, swimming around in. But imagine it's sugar, so it's very sticky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget, too, I loved my scenes with Jacob in the nightmare house and in the hospital. I love that scene when he comes up to my hospital door and I'm, you know, I'm asking about him, and just the tenderness of that scene. I really enjoyed that scene.
Wow.
So, but I have so many memories from 5 and 4. It almost feels like I just did them a few months ago.
That's so cool. So. That's so cool to feel like it was just yesterday. Now 30 really years does. Later, and we're still talking about 4 and 5, and it's the legacy of the Nightmare movies. You know, it's just unending, and it will live on forever. And that's really cool that, you know, you took those memories away from the production.
Oh my gosh. It's such an honor to be part of the franchise. It really is. I mean, I had we had no idea, you know, 30 years later, we'd still be over 30 years, still be talking about Nightmare on Elm Street, and not only talking about it, but like you touched on too, it doesn't stop. It keeps growing.
It just keeps
growing. The fan base just continues on generation to generation to generation. So it's pretty awesome. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, it is. And Lisa, I have one more question for you. And it's a question that I ask all of our class of 89 graduates. And it is, what advice would you give yourself 30 years ago?
I would say, have more fun, Lisa. Life is not so serious, you know? I would say have more fun. I was very serious on set and, you know, took it just so seriously. I wish I had kind of played around, you know, when we had breaks in between takes and that kind of thing. I wish I'd just been a little more relaxed and you know, goofy. Let's put it that way. So that's the advice I would give myself overall back at that time, you know, lighten up.
Nice. So were you kind of like a method actor? Were you like, so did you have a process to get into the Alice character?
Yes, somewhat. I studied method, I studied Grotowski, I studied all kinds of things, so I probably used a whole variety of, you know, treatments that I utilized to play her, you know. But it's kind of one of those things I think I learned too about seeing young actors that, like, for instance, when you have to cry in a scene, and, you know, someone will have their earplugs in and they're staying in that zone all day long, which is exhausting,
Yeah.
And I would like to give advice for those of you who are out there acting. There is a way to just let your mind be hanging out on set, doing whatever, and then have something, that little treasure in your mind that knows it's going to spark and make you cry instantly. Because if you keep thinking about that thing over and over and over again, your brain gets tired of it and you won't be able to cry. It's better to kind of keep it just tucked away right behind your left lobe. You know what I mean? Just kind of there. just kind of there, but don't hit it hard with a hammer all day long, you know?
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, no, that's great advice because that just sounds draining.
It is. Yeah, it is. And then that moment comes when you need to cry, you've already exhausted your emotions, you know, hours before because you spent so much time focused on it. That's some advice.
That is great advice. And I hope our listeners out there who are aspiring actors and actresses definitely take advice from Lisa Wilcox, who played Alice Johnson. And I'd love to know what you're excited about right now and what projects you're working on.
Oh, yeah. I did a movie last year called The Bloody Man, and Tuesday Knight is actually in it too. She played Kristen in Nightmare 4. Yeah, we don't have any scenes together, but we are in the same film. And then I am doing some filming in Texas in July for a movie called In Between. And then a movie that I did with that same director is having a screening of a film called Imago. I think he changed the name of it, but I can never remember it because I just remember I love the title Imago. But anyway, that film is completed, so he's going to do a screening out in Houston. So you'll see it on my Facebook once I get more details. And then I'm also involved with a project called The Mansfield Killing. So yeah, a whole number of things happening and, you know, enjoying it.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your memories from that moment in time when you worked on A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Well, thank you so much. It's fun to talk about.
I'm your real friend, Jade. Just like your daddy. Good to go.
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 89. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 89 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original produced and hosted by Natasha Pacetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pacetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.